I'm Bill Littlefield, and it's time for Three Stories You Should Know. This week, we're going to begin with a tale of espionage. It's just silly. Seriously, my guests this time around are Michael Lee of Yahoo Sports and Rachel Bachman of The Wall Street Journal. Welcome back to both of you.
Thank you.
Great to be here, Bill.
Rachel, if that really is your name, please give us the case report.
Well, Bill, you've heard of WikiLeaks. Now we have WakeyLeaks.
Uh-oh.
The radio announcer for Wake Forest University football was fired this week after school officials discovered he'd been revealing inside information to opponents since 2014. At least three teams have been contacted about their potential involvement, and one of them, Louisville, actually confirmed it received a few plays, but said that none of them were used in this year's game, so it didn't affect the outcome, which Louisville, by the way, won by 32 points. Intrigue.
It worked.
So there are a lot of questions coming up, of course, in the wake of this revelation. By the way, Wake Forest is playing in a bowl game, so their season is still active. One question, how many teams received plays in advance? And how were the outcomes of those games affected? And the biggest question, which has not been answered yet, is why would the announcer, who is a Wake Forest alum, do this?
It's a question hanging in the air for Michael to answer it. Go.
Well, I have two thoughts on this. One is sometimes it's not best to keep your enemies close to you, you know, because this was a guy who wanted the head coaching job and didn't get it.
Ah.
This was probably the best way for him to sabotage the staff that was there. And two, you're playing Wake Forest. Do you really need inside information to beat one of the sorriest teams in the ACC? I mean, I understand that, you know, yeah, you don't want to have all your secret plays revealed, but you're Wake Forest.
All right, Michael, you had some answers. Rachel, I'm going to go back to questions on this one. Did Wake Forest know their plays were being given to the opposition? Because why else would they not use any of the plays that were given to the opposition? And will this nefarious play-by-play guy be waterboarded until he confesses that Vladimir Putin was behind the entire outrage? I'm having a very hard time seeing this as a universal problem. But is it? Is college football threatened, college football as we know it?
Yes, I would say this is potentially a big problem. And the reason is because the whole reason why sports are compelling is because they're supposed to be fair, right? Mm. We're supposed to not know the outcomes in advance. I mean, this is why Pete Rose is not in the Hall of Fame, because he bet on baseball and that raised the specter of whether games were altered because of his betting and the involvement of gambling. So, yeah, this is potentially a big issue if the fairness of games is in doubt.
Michael, I understand you've been thinking about an exceptional example of mediocrity, and what an interesting combination of words that is. Anyway, please explain.
This week, the Los Angeles Rams fired a coach whose career is a monument to mediocrity, and that's Jeff Fisher. But there's a really big loser in this entire thing, and it has nothing to do with Jeff Fisher. The really big loser is Dan Reeves. When the Rams fired Jeff Fisher, he was 4-9. And he tied Dan Reeves with an all-time loss record. He was fired just before he got ready to play Seattle Seahawks. So if he got a chance to finish the season, he would have been able to hold on as the losingest coach in NFL history, which is something that Jeff Fisher has really earned over his last 22 years. But being the losingest coach doesn't necessarily mean that you're sorry. It means that you have longevity. Now, Fisher's longevity makes no sense. Jeff Fisher reached one Super Bowl. Now, Dan Reeves, on the other hand, reached four Super Bowls, three with the Broncos and one with the Falcons. But the worst part about Fisher going down is that the record's going to stand for some time, and there won't be another coach that has a chance to get the all-time loss record. Bill Belichick right now is the closest. Bill Belichick is the closest with 115. Belichick could lose every game for the next six seasons and still have a better winning percentage than Jeff Fisher. And if Fisher was hired by another team and went 16-0 in his first season, he still had fewer wins than Dan Reeves. So I ask, how can someone be so mediocre for so long and still get paid?
Rachel, the case against Jeff Fisher has been made. Do you wish to speak on behalf of the defense?
Actually, no. I am totally baffled by this. I have no idea what secret power or secret information Jeff Fisher has in his possession. My only guess is that he must be the best interview in NFL history or is the best at managing up. This is truly baffling, especially in an age where it seems like GMs and owners are quicker than ever to fire coaches. He has incredible staying power.
This is the sort of story that makes me wonder how responsible a coach is for the performance of a team. Long time ago, I asked Gino Auriemma, the coach of the women's basketball team at UConn, what advice he would give a coach trying to build a good women's basketball team. And he said, recruit Rebecca Lobo. I don't know if the mediocrity of a team should be blamed on a coach any more than the great success of a team should be attributed to a coach. Maybe we've made too much of these alleged geniuses in both cases. Michael, what do you think?
I think in some cases the coach does make a difference. And in this case, he's the one that's actually in charge of picking the players. So he had a lot of responsibility that had more to do with X's and O's. And when your players Ty Gurley this year said they run a middle school offense, I think that kind of points squarely at the coach and his staff.
It's not good unless you're playing other middle schools.
Yeah, I think they beat some middle school teams. I'll give you that.
All right. This week, Yahoo Sports released the results of their survey of National Hockey League fans. 51% of the fans said that a formal ban on fighting would have, quote, no impact on their viewership. 24% said a ban would make them less likely to watch. 25% said they'd be more likely to watch. I know that survey results can be interpreted in various ways, and I'm oversimplifying the data. But as far as I'm concerned, the bottom line here is that if fights were eliminated from the National Hockey League, the league would be no less popular than it is now. Also, games would more often depend on what the fastest, most highly skilled players can do on the ice. Pro hockey, at its worst, would cease to resemble pro wrestling, and we wouldn't have to witness the goofy spectacle of two guys trying to pull shirts over each other's heads and gain balance on the ice while throwing punches. And then there are the injuries that happen sometimes during these fights. So you guys can interpret this survey any way you like. I say the results argue that the NHL should just go ahead, eliminate fighting, and then cross their fingers and hope that the survey is pretty much right. Michael, what do you think?
Well, as someone who really doesn't watch a lot of NHL, I've only been to three games in my life, and the only one that stood out is the one where they were fighting a lot. And I went to a Blackhawks and a Lightning game, and I was really fighting, like, this is really dull. And then once I started fighting, I got really into it. Mm. So for me, the fighting is probably the funniest part of the whole event because for me, it's hard to keep track of the puck. I don't really know what's going on. I don't understand the rules, but I understand two guys slugging each other for a long time.
Yeah, but
so,
two guys slugging each other while they're both trying to stay balanced on ice.
That's what makes
on
it so incredible.
No.
They're on blades. If you've gone ice skating, you know how hard it is to keep your balance on those skates. And they're like just drilling
this
each other
true.
In the
he
face.
Makes a good point.
It's still
oh,
standing.
Rachel.
That's an impressive feat. That way you get two sports. You get hockey and boxing in the same event. You pay
no,
for
well,
events.
No, it's not boxing when a guy's wearing a helmet and they both have skates. It's
a lot
not
of times they rip off the helmets and go to work. You know?
Oh, gosh. Once again, I've tossed up the softball that you guys have fouled off.
You think I fouled it
no,
off?
I've got
to hit it out the park.
Rachel, take it from there.
I think the strongest argument for your case, Bill, is Olympic hockey. No fighting in Olympic hockey. And when you get past the early garbage rounds of with the countries that can't play, the games are fantastic. And so I think if you look at that, definitely no fighting does not detract from that product. Now, they only play over 4 years, and so there is a scarcity element, and you've got matchups you don't normally see. But that, I think, illustrates that if you get two really competitive teams, you don't necessarily need fighting to prop it up.
Yeah, and speaking for somebody who's been in New England for a good many years where there are several excellent hockey teams, they don't have that much fighting in college hockey. And if they do, guys mm-hmm. tend to get suspended. And so, yeah, we see great hockey up here and very little fighting except when the Bruins are on the ice down the street. All right. I'm sorry that my argument didn't convince all of you, but I look forward to welcoming both of you back anyway. My guests for this week's three stories you should know have been Michael Lee of Yahoo Sports and Rachel Bachman of The Wall Street Journal. Thank you, both of you.
Thank you, Bill.
Appreciate it. Great to be on.